3, 2, 1, and go. We are live. Welcome to the Smash Life Experience Podcast. I'm your host, Michael K. Hughes, and today is episode number 4, special guest number 2. We have a very intriguing, very interesting guest today, got an awesome story, which I don't know the full details of, which is part of the reason that I wanted to bring him onto the show is for my benefit, but then also obviously to share his story, his message, and his knowledge with the rest of the world. So quick shout out to today's sponsors, Be Yoga Warrington. You can find them on Facebook and Instagram at Be Yoga Warrington. And more on that later today in the episode. So today's guest, special guest, is 28 years old. He is from Warrington, England. He is a former military paratrooper. I'm going to use these terms loosely. I'm going to let him explain better in a second. Former military paratrooper and boxer turned new age yogi. And at that point, I'll leave it over to you. Welcome, Mr. Daniel Hodge.
Hello. All right, mate.
Boom. Great to have you on.
Yeah, great to be here. So where do you want me to start? Should we start right way back when, mate, or?
Let's go with military paratrooper boxer. Have I got that correct?
Yeah. So I started boxing for hook and jab in Warrington. Pretty familiar. It was Bridgeport ABC at the time. The Amateur Boxing Club is now hook and jab.
Yeah.
Pretty renowned in Warrington. Started boxing for them as well. I was 14. I was pretty much the same size as I am now. So I was like a heavyweight boxer at 14. So struggled to get a lot of fights.
Yeah.
Went in a few national. I was sort of bet boxing and like national level straight away. Won a couple like novice titles sort of thing, and then did okay beyond that. Yeah, about 14, 15, I won like a national novice title. Within a couple of finals in this like coming years, but just one of them, mate, as you get to like 16 and life takes a different path. And then, I was sort of working in the gym at the time, didn't really know what to do. I'd left school. And then decided to
hook and jab.
Yeah, hook and jab, just as like a boxing training and stuff. And then basically the story for the military was a friend of mine who's now, he's still serving. We went to like, I think it was at the recruitment centre in St. Helens, and went in basically with the intention to go to the Navy boxing team. That was our intention. Like, okay. We knew the coach, sort of, and with that, we went in and we thought, you know what, we're going to get paid, we'll just go on, we'll pass out of training, we'll go straight on the boxing team, we'll just be paid to be athletes, sort of thing. Yeah. And then we got in there and they started, trying to sell us the Royal Marines and stuff, and we sort of left, but it planted a bit of a seed in my head. A couple of things happened with that, why it didn't work out. Mainly to do with me getting in trouble. And then about a year beyond that, I looked at, one of my friends was going in the paras, which is the sort of army, you've got the Marines and the paras are sort of tit for tat with each other in the Navy and the Army respectively. And then, I went through this process, like joined in to February 2012, I think it was, passed out at the end of that year out of basic training, which is in Catterick. And went to 1st Battalion, the Parachute Regiment, which is like part of the Special Forces group. January the following year, so January in 2013, I turned up there. And then I literally left, February this year? So,
2000.
Yeah, so I've left about 4 or 5 months ago, yeah.
Right, Sam. It's not clear for me, and I guess for listeners as well, paratroopers is like the Marines of the Air Force, or have I got that totally wrong?
No, so you've got like, you've got your three units within, like three, so you've got the Army, the Air Force, and the Navy. The Navy's elite unit would be the Royal Marines. The RAF's elite unit, they've got a unit called the RAF Regiment, which is seen as their sort of frontline troops. And then the Army's got the Parachute Regiment, but what they did, I went straight to like the Special Force Support Group, which is a combination of all three.
So it roughly works
out like 60% paras, maybe 30% or so Royal Marines and maybe 10% RAF and some other attachments. So yeah, like my first corporal that I had, my first like team like leader was a Marine, even though I was a para, and so it's like a crossbreeding.
Okay.
Yeah, it's an interesting environment to be in.
I bet. Give me a typical day. What was like a typical day for you then?
Pretty varying over the years. So when I first got there, it's brutal, like, because you're just a new, I was, what, 20, 21 years old. Everybody that came was a similar age. And it's like it's a tough place to be. Like people on the outside looking in would just call it, like, bullying, essentially. So it's a pretty harsh environment to be in. Like, you just get messed about all the time, etc. And just typical things that you'd expect, like,
yeah,
going on the range, firing rifles, like lots of fitness, lots of like exercises, sort of outdoor, and then some other interesting things. Like we're on a counter-terrorism rotation, so you do some more like close combat stuff, like clearing buildings, that sort of stuff. And then it moved on to like towards the end of my time there, like my career in the army. I studied Arabic for a year, so then at so in that, I was just in a classroom every day for a year. And then at the end of that, I was obviously in the Middle East. So the majority of it is a linguist. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That was the last couple of years.
You mentioned Middle East. Talk a little bit about some of the travel that you've done. Because from what I gather, you've
been... Within the army?
Yes.
Within the army or outside the army?
Within. Just within for now. Just within for now. We'll
Within the army... Quite a lot of bits of Europe, like just Germany, Poland, places like that.
Yeah.
And then within beyond that, to the Middle East, I've been to Iraq, Jordan a couple of times, Oman a couple of times, Bahrain. I've been to North Africa. Where else have I been in the Middle East? I'm sure there's a couple of others.
And are these all...
Yeah.
On exercise like training, or is that been
no, like a couple of you sort of have, some of them would have been on exercise training, some of them would have been like an operational tour, so like Iraq was an operational tour, and then a couple of others like North Africa and was more of an exercise sort of thing, and then there's others which they call them like training teams, so they're technically an operation, but they're not in any way a combat operation. You go in to train troops, essentially. So they call them like a short-term training team. So you go there and maybe train some troops from that country or from somewhere else or whatever it may be.
Wow. Madness, man.
Seriously.
Yeah. Another world. Nothing like I.
But at the same time, yeah.
You're going to say at the same time, what?
It's not, it sounds like very glamorous and stuff, and in some people's careers it might have been all black or down, but it wasn't really for me. Like, it's a relatively quiet period. My career was in a relatively quiet period for sort of the British military, and a lot of the reason I was away because I was used as a linguist, essentially, do you know what I mean? So it was eventful maybe for people looking in, but being there, it's interesting, but it's not... Definitely not like a war movie or anything like that.
Right. Okay. Can you give us like what would be like a typical day, like gym and stuff, or are we still boxing at this point when you're on all these?
Well, yeah. So I did a short amount of time on the army boxing team, and then
also your boxing was before the army, was before the military.
Boxing since I was about 13, 14.
Right,
I started boxing.
Right. So
competitively at 14. Yeah.
Sort of stopped when you went to the military. Not stopped, but you weren't.
I stopped for about a year, and then I did go to the army boxing team, so I went full time as an athlete in the army, but I did about 3 or 4 months down at Aldershot, I was just a full time athlete, but I had a bit of a fall, and I put my shoulder, so I was in a sling. That's what I've like, basically like an operation on my subarachnoid, and I'd sacked it after that. They asked me to go back, and I'd considered going back, but at that point I just wanted to soldier. I didn't really want to go and be an athlete,
Okay. Let's talk a little bit then about some of the challenges that you faced in the military? Maybe a little story, anything that pops up.
Sorry, which one to? Okay, I think the most.
By the way, the most challenging thing. Something to you that might not seem as what's the right word? Not exciting, but to me and to listeners, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Very interesting, but you know they say. Yeah. That, you know, when you're in something, you don't find it interesting anymore.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I think physically challenging would have to be basic training. Like basic training, I personally loved it, and it's probably the funniest time of my life. And it's 6 months.
Oh, 6 months! Wow.
Yeah. So that is the one thing. Like basic training is exactly, especially in the parachute regiment, is exactly what you would see on a movie. It's brutal and. I mean, there's been documentaries on ITV, I think, about it recently and stuff. They obviously water it down. It is brutal. I think,
gives it, but it's hilarious. Something that pops up.
Yeah, so like, I think the toughest point of that for me was like towards the end of basic training. You do an exercise called the Mole, and it's basically 5 days. I think we did it in Otterburn in Scotland, on the border of Scotland, so you can imagine the weather. I've lost you there. I've got you back. So you can imagine the weather then. It's basically 5 days straight of digging. No sleep, like you're not allowed to sleep, and you just dig a big trench, and there's no real science to it or anything. It's just 5 days, no sleep, minimal food, shovel, and just dig, and like you hallucinate beyond belief. Like that was by far. I mean, I can remember digging it. You just thought you're falling asleep on the spot every 2 minutes, and your feet are underwater for 3 or 4 days, and like that was probably for me the physically the toughest. And then I think mentally probably, like going to some of these countries with. Obviously, I'd studied Arabic for a year, but it's such a tough language. And I'm not like a natural linguist. So going to those countries and been put in quite difficult situations. Not so much like anything violent or anything like that, but just having to go and speak to like the head of a unit in Jordan or something in his office, and your Arabic's not the greatest. And like,
wow.
It's that stressful. That's more stressful because you're doing something in somebody else's language. And yeah.
Incredible, man. But with that said, some of the lessons and the life skills and the character building.
You
can't get that anywhere else, can you? Or it's difficult to get in other scenarios.
Definitely. There's negative things I would have to say and stuff about it. Things maybe, whatever, but genuinely it's good for me. It put me on a better path in life, and like everything's part of your story, isn't it? So yeah,
correct. Your struggle becomes your story. Exactly.
Yeah.
What would you say are a couple of key sort of personal core values that you learned through your time in the military? So going in as a 18-year-old young boy, dare I say, and then over the 7 years, was it 18 you went in? Sorry, no.
I'm just thinking a bit later, but 19, 20. I think I might have been 20. I did about 7.5 years. It's interesting actually because of boxing, a lot of the values are similar anyway.
Yeah, right.
Do you know what I mean? So a lot of people say to me, joining the military sort of not saved me, but like helped me do something decent. But I sort of think I agree, but like I didn't feel like. Even in basic training, even though it was horrendously hard, I still felt I had other levels to go, and I didn't find the discipline too difficult or anything like that, because I think I found I already had it from boxing.
Okay.
So, but that, yeah, just... And I think the main one is just, like... I mean, we call it in the military, like, no bluff too tough. Just learning to, like, bluff any situation, like, nothing. Learning on the spot, like, straight, like... Having very minimal training in something, but finding a way to do it to like a very high level, and not being disheartened that maybe, like, for example, you're put into leadership roles that you're not qualified to be in, and just giving briefs. Like I said, then being put in a situation with like the head of a unit in the Middle East, and like I'm a relatively young junior soldier, and, but like the parachute regiment just breeds you to just learn to just find a way, put a brave face on, just find a way and bluff. Yeah, just bluff it. I mean, I don't think that's not a technical term, but just a bluff. Just to bluff your way through it, and
to relate it back to what we're about with the Smash Life experiences, whatever it takes, no fear of failure, because you've not got much option, really, have you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No fear of judgment. You're not fearing what the guy's thinking of you. Or maybe you are, but it's on a slightly more serious level.
Yeah.
I guess you know there are some of the lessons that you can take away from that time and kind of go and apply into your life now, obviously, which we'll
definitely
in a minute. And overall, sounds like an interesting period of your life. Yeah.
Yeah.
What would you say? One or two highlights, one or two of your best times, best memories.
I think like, it's. I mean, people talk. Like, they say like, oh, brotherhood and all this, and like I found that to be true in some circumstances, but I also found that to be a load of rubbish. But when I first got to battalion, I had like quite a close group of young lads, and just being 21 years old and like being in like a relatively elite unit in the army, and just enjoying it, like going out. I wouldn't say one specific time, but just being able to just going out, like moving down to Cardiff and just having a good time with like young like-minded lads, and then probably beyond that,
being a part of something bigger than yourself, I guess.
And then beyond that, probably the just going on the Arabic course was a highlight for me, because I've never spent any time in a classroom. I've never really studied, didn't think I could, and then obviously I passed that course and I did well and met a lot of, obviously coming into contact with a lot of different people from all over the Middle East and then like Africa, a lot of different like Muslim countries and stuff, and getting to know a bit about that culture. I loved it, like I really loved it, Dan, and that was a highlight, which is probably an unusual highlight to have sitting in a classroom for a year when you've been in the army, but it was good.
Can you give us a quick sentence in Arabic?
What do you want me to say? I'm a bit out of... Salaam alaikum, ismi Daniel. Shukran jazilan, ya Michael. So I just said...
beautiful.
Like,
go on.
Yeah, I'm out of... Put me on the spot there. But I just said... Salaam alaikum is just like... It's like a greeting. So like, sort of may God be with you sort of thing. That's roughly something like that. I just said my name is Daniel, and I just said thank you, Mike.
I like it, man. Salam alaikum. Are you there? Gone off?
Yeah,
we're back. Yeah. Salam alaikum.
So, salam alaikum. So, it's like, salam is like peace be upon you. It's like, peace be upon you. It's probably a better translation.
Salam.
Yeah.
Say again. Go on. One more.
Salam alaikum.
Salam alaikum.
Salam. Yeah, roughly.
Boom. That's it for next time that we're on in future. I welcome you with that. I like it. Okay, so I think that's a good time then, I guess, to like link in with our story. So I worked it out, and it was May, I think it was the bank holiday weekend, or maybe the weekend before, 2015, in Giraffe, which is a house night in Warrington.
Yeah.
I was there to see Jimmy Switch DJing.
Yeah.
Also, I believe Detlef, who's now plays regularly with Paradise and that kind of stuff, was playing. Yeah. Is it James Glover's night? Giraffe?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
I'm not sure how, but we got introduced. I don't know if it was a mutual friend or...
I think it was...
Is it Sherlock?
Yeah, it was one of those. I think I was there with Neil, and they were friends. Yeah, something like that, yeah.
And so I guess I met you when you were in the midst of your military days, let's say.
Yeah, bang in the middle, yeah.
And then we kind of stayed in touch for a year or two. And I've got a couple of notes. One is Dubai job, the boxing job.
Yeah, we spoke about that, didn't I? I forgot about that.
Remind us, what happened with that? That was...
I was looking at
Facebook and
you shared the post, but I mean, it was something of nothing in the end, but I was considering leaving the army at the time, and then this boxing job come up for a coach. Obviously, I'm I was a qualified boxing coach. I looked into it. Yeah, and I was going to go over to Dubai. I didn't end up going, but it was all like set up good to go. Essentially, and there was no reason why I wasn't going to get it. It was just a case of going over there, meeting it. And I think it was half that fell through on their end, and then half I just decided I wasn't going to leave the military. Essentially,
right.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. Crazy, right? Let me ask you, sorry, I meant to ask as well, what was your record boxing, amateur? Do you remember?
I can't, 50-50 record. Amateur boxing's, it's much like modern MMA in terms of like, a lot of people have got a lot of losses, it's like more fit, people have generally 50-50 records, but.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly how many fights I had. Around, I don't even know.
50?
No, I'm close, more than 10, closer to 20, something like that.
Yeah. Nice, man. Nice. Okay. And then that links us in then. I guess we didn't speak for, I'm not sure how long it was, a year or two. And I started sort of focusing on yoga at Hot Buddha in Penketh. I remember it like it was yesterday. So I walked in and I was at the front on sort of the right hand side, and on the far left hand side there was this like godlike looking figure. I've got a couple of notes about this story. So I remember being inspired, and in yoga, for anyone that's listening, you kind of, or maybe if you've not been, it's silent obviously, so you kind of subconsciously model other people. So I can just remember seeing this guy kind of glowing and just thinking, wow, this guy's like, he looks like a proper, like he knows what he's doing. And the whole session, everything that the instructor, the teacher at the front of the class sort of instructed us to do, you were doing like the next level. And I was like, wow, this guy's serious. At the end of the session in the changing rooms, I got in the shower, got out, and I was kind of in a rush, so I nearly didn't speak to you, but I thought, I'm going to speak to this guy, because if I don't, then I'll regret it. And I was like, how long have you been doing yoga, mate? And you looked up at me, and you were like, Mike. And I was like, Danny. I was like, couldn't believe it. Do you remember?
I remember it, mate.
Madness. And crazy. So that, I think, is a nice little opener to lead us into. Tell us about that journey and how that's gone. How did it start? I want to talk about some of the challenges you faced transitioning, sort of, still in the middle. Now and so on. So fire away with that.
How did it start?
How did it start then?
Right. How did it start? Probably how a lot of men go to a yoga class. Essentially, I was chasing my now partner. So that was it. I mean,
I didn't know that.
That's the absolute truth. So she was sorry if the camera's moving. I've just had to put the phone on charge. So speaking to her, essentially wasn't particularly interested, but she invited me to a yoga class at Hot Buddha, I believe. So obviously I was down in Cardiff in the military at the time. So I thought, before I come back for the weekend and go to this yoga class with Charlotte, I'll get a couple of practice sessions in. So I went to like a class at like in a village hall in Barry, you know where like Gavin and Stacey's filmed?
Right.
Like literally like that town.
Wow.
So so I went to a yoga class there. It was mostly like middle-aged women. It was a lady from New Zealand who'd been teaching for years and years. And it's a pretty strange experience. Like I felt high after it. Like it wasn't necessarily physically hard. I mean, I wasn't particularly flexible, but physically it wasn't that challenging for me, but obviously flexibility wise it might have been a little bit. But yeah, and I got speaking to her at the end, and I think I went another time that week or maybe the week after, and straight away, I think within a couple of times, she said to me, oh, you'll be a good yoga teacher one day. She started bringing me lots of like, I'd showed no interest. This is like the second time or third time I'd ever done yoga.
Wow.
She started bringing me print offs about like the diet in yoga and lots of other different practices beyond like what we may be doing in a common yoga studio, lots of breathing stuff. And it just hooked me. It was like just the spiritual side of everything. It's like it sort of filled the gap, I think. And I was still like, I was only 2 years into the military at this point. So this is like five, six years ago.
Ah.
And then I think later on that year, I was going to Thailand, like on a lad's holiday for 6 weeks. Some of the lads from work, some of my lads mates who were living in Australia at the time. And I spent the first 3 weeks at a place called Mindful Farm, sort of north. Are you familiar with Thailand? You are, aren't you?
Yeah.
So like north of Chiang Mai, about 70k, and it's like in the sort of mountains a little bit. And it was an ex-monk who ran this place, and I just found out about it in a hostel. So I went up there, day's travel on the back of like a little rickety bus. And he taught me to, like, there's yoga there every day, and he taught me to meditate, and that was, yeah, and then the rest is history sort of thing. I mean, I'd already gone vegetarian and all that at this point. Like, I was still in the army. So, one sec, I've lost you.
It's all right, you've gone off. It's okay. I can still hear you. Don't worry about the video. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm back.
You're good. Keep going.
So I come back from then.
Mindful Farm.
So Mindful Farm, at the time, I think it was pretty new. I don't think there was a website or even a Facebook page, but I think now if you look it up, it's all...
Oh, Danny's gone. We're going to pause. And we're back. Little technical hitch.
Sorry about that.
So let me ask. That was, you're going on a lad's holiday, inverted commas, to do all the usual stuff, and then you got sidetracked, or...
I was going for a bit of travelling. Like, I was going for 6 weeks. I was going to meet up with the lads for like 2 weeks. So,
okay, obviously, so you had the plan to
go to Survival Farm. I didn't have any of that. So when I booked this holiday, I'd not even started yoga. I booked it like months in advance.
Wow.
But then obviously I'd started doing yoga and all this stuff. So I thought I'll try and find somewhere like that when I got there. So I didn't have a clue what I was looking for, and I just met somebody in a hot. So I just jumped on with him. I just jumped on the like this little yellow bus in the morning with him and just went up there. It was a good experience. I spent about 10 days there, 2 weeks. And
nice.
Yeah, so just it blew my mind a little bit.
That was a bit of a catalyst, yeah. Blew your mind.
Yeah. Just sitting there with people. I'd never... Like, I was just used to sitting in the pub with the lads sort of thing, or the lads at work, or whatever it be. So it's like, I was meeting all these different people, hippies and stuff, for want of a better phrase. And the guy running it was had been a Buddhist monk all his life, and he'd sort of left it and had a family at that point. But, yeah, it was completely different.
Incredible.
And that's sort of how it went. For a few years, doing these sort of things like that, like doing a lot of yoga, but also still living the life in the army and... doing it. So it was a bit like a split life.
Bipolar, you know what I mean? Yeah, living too long.
Pretty much, just as us figuring it out. I mean, not to any extremes or anything, but, and it just slowly just filtered in this, and then I think maybe two or three years ago it got pretty serious, and I was like, by this point I was practicing every day, I'd enrolled in a couple of yoga courses, and it took over,
Okay, let's go a little deeper on that. You say that these were conversations that you'd never had before because you're used to being in the pub with military guys. I meant to ask about military. I heard stories, I don't know how true this is, about guys that basically feel like you're on top of the world, like you're in sort of the military. Steroids, a lot of like macho, weightlifting, all that kind of stuff. Is that right?
I mean, maybe with the steroid stuff, you do get it, but you get the random drug tested and that, so it's...
Ah.
I mean, you do get it, but for the rest of it, yeah, macho environment, all that stuff. It's a top of the world thing, and it's definitely part of it for me. Like, I wonder sometimes now how many people, I mean, I've had these conversations with lots of my colleagues and stuff, but how many people actually enjoy the job and how many people are just doing it for the title, does that make sense?
Yeah,
the title, they're in the Special Forces or the Parachute Regiment or the Marines or whatever it may be. I suppose that translates through a lot of things in life as well. How many people are doing things that they really enjoy it, or just because the title appeals to them or the benefits, but actually day-to-day enjoy it. Because I think for me, like I say, the most enjoyable thing I did on it for me was doing an Arabic course, sat in a classroom. I didn't like any of it per se, but I definitely wasn't like my dream job.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know who wants to be freezing cold and wet and
up in Scotland. Jeepers.
Yeah, exactly. Like, to say you love it is maybe a bit of an exaggeration, but yeah.
Okay.
One
thing I've got written down on the line. Tell me then, this is one of the key points, I think, of the whole conversation. What's the challenge as a military guy? You've kind of found this sort of new way of life, let's say. You're practicing yoga. Yeah. You're eating vegetarian at this point?
Vegan not? Within a couple of years, yeah.
Vegan, yeah. And I think we spoke about this kind of a little bit off the podcast anyway, but what are the challenges of interacting in that kind of like macho environment?
It's a funny one because like I think you do encounter that, like the typical like sort of joking around and like people like not understanding it, not accepting of it, and you can imagine in that environment, I mean, like any lad environment, there's a lot of jokes made and whatever, a lot of prodding, especially because there's a massive hierarchical system in the army. So people that's been in a longer amount of time, although they've got no reason to or no necessary right to, they'll almost sort of gently bully, for want of a better term, the people below them, even if they're full grown men in their own right and etc etc. Age doesn't really come into it, it's sort of holding on. So you get a bit of that, and there was a lot of that, but I have to be fair to the people, a lot of the lads as well. I mean, for whatever reason, a lot of lads that go into that part of the military, sort of special forces, elite units, parachute regiment, marines, etc. But I'll be fair to the ones that do have quite an open mind, and they have gone there to achieve something, so they've gone there to achieve something that's maybe not, is a bit off the beaten track, like it's something like a high achievement, and I don't know how I personally feel about the word achievement anyway, but so a lot of them are open to just being better, so if they think
like it,
they're seeing me, so I mean, you get all the normal things you'd expect. I'm sure everybody listening to this would expect of somebody who goes vegan and practicing yoga in the army. I did dealt with that my own way, but there's a lot of lads that were really open-minded, lads that played with like veganism, vegetarian. I know a couple that are still vegan, vegetarian, like off the back of, not necessarily just because of me, but that sort of thing. I've got another friend, I'll give him a plug, Stephen Sturrock, who's got his own yoga studio sort of thing in Taunton, Hot Pod Yoga Taunton. So I served with him through my whole career, and so there was like-minded people that are willing to try stuff, but yeah, it's different. It was more challenging when you sat in a desert in the Middle East and you're eating rice because there's nothing else to eat if you're a vegan in that environment. So,
Okay. Interesting, man. Very interesting. Look, I always like to relate stuff back.
Of course, yeah.
Relating it back, it's kind of anybody that is seen to do something kind of different or against the sort of the normal, the mainstream, oftentimes do you get sort of ridiculed or laughed at for your better phrase or whatever. But I think the reason for that is oftentimes something that we don't understand, natural sort of human reaction, especially in kind of Western world, is just kind of to reject it and to kind of just sort of be negative towards it, put it down.
100%. Yeah.
I guess it's that kind of like power kind of thing, that if you don't understand something and you don't want to feel like a loss of power, that you don't understand something, so the natural reaction is to kind of just blindly just sort of put it down. The kind of dogma is the right phrase, isn't it?
100%, definitely.
Understanding old ways of thinking. I guess talking about sort of vegan and vegetarian, that kind of stuff, I think that it's an absolute minefield in terms of so many different opinions and all that stuff. And I think the takeaway is find what works for you, and then follow that. Would you agree with that, or would your take on that be?
Like you say, it's a minefield, and like
I think with
you have to mind yourself.
So much information overload of training, nutrition. It's just like crazy.
I mean, I think it's worked for me. And, like, obviously, I think with veganism, which is what I can really speak about, there's different sides to it. So people generally say there's the animals, the environment, and then your own health. Obviously, I'd say to begin with, it was sort of for my own health, and I think it just encouraged me. I mean, I've never been a bad eater because I'd boxed and always made weight and stuff like that. I was never out of the gym. I was not low, what we consider reasonably well, but when I went vegan, it made a massive, massive difference. And I hear a lot of people say that that's an immediate thing because you're eating a lot of more nutrient-dense foods and stuff. Maybe that's true, but it's essentially continued for me. And it's got to the point for me, I think with the yoga and stuff, I'm not like a preachy vegan or like an aggressive vegan and such, but I don't really do it for my health too much now. I mean, there's so many things that affect our health that are probably more important than diet, like stress, etc., etc. So for me, it's more like, I don't believe it's necessary for me to eat animals. That's not to say everybody else should feel like that or whatever. It's just my personal stance. Now that's where I'm at with it, to be honest. And my partner's obviously a vegan and stuff, but beyond that, very few people in my life, like most of my friends, eat meat. It's just not, I'm not like a militant vegan with these sort of things, but
that's one of the negative things seen around veganism, for example, is that many vegan, inverted commas, people feel the need to force it onto everybody else. Big difference between sharing something and being open.
Yeah.
If you like it, great. If not, it's great as well. Versus forcing it onto people and like this whole
kind of
thing. The principle of what people are trying to do anyway, yeah?
Yeah, and I think when I first went there, I'm passionate about it and stuff, and within reason. But when for the first year or two, I was probably quite not necessarily but within my friends and family anyway, quite forceful with it. And you know what? It doesn't do anything for you. It doesn't do anything for them. I think whatever you're trying to do in your life, if you just live it and people will come to it at their own pace. Like the amount of people, everybody I think that has ever been encouraged or whatever to go vegan or start yoga that I've known, I'm not saying there's like hundreds of these people, but the ones that have, I think it's just through example, like nothing particular that I've said to them or any statistic I've given them or any video I've shown them or anything. They just sort of come to the conclusion on their own and through seeing maybe the way you live. And I think that's the same with anything.
Two things, I agree. The truth will always prevail. The truth comes from.
Yeah.
Don't need to hype anything up because the truth is enough.
No.
And I think it was Mahatma Gandhi who said, be the change you want to see in the world.
100%. 100%.
Subconsciously, people understand and they follow the lead, don't they?
Yeah, I agree, yeah.
Beautiful. I like it, man. I like it. Listen, let's press on. Obviously, we are a little
pressed
for time. So that leads us then. So we've gone military, paras, boxing, all this kind of sort of tough guy approach, for use of a better phrase. Then we've transitioned across a series of events that have unfolded. And we're now kind of going down the rabbit hole of sort of the new age health of the new age health and wellness of yoga, all of this kind of stuff. Then that leads us to also Edo Portal. We met up.
Of course.
Sefton Park. So it's not all yoga. It's a whole different.
I've lost you.
Are you there?
Yeah, I got you back. I just lost the sound then.
Yeah, cool. It's not just yoga, it's a whole different way of sort of thinking of being, of living. Tell us quickly about Edo Portal. You went to a course in Denmark.
Yeah, in Copenhagen. So I think how I came across it. I came across a video. I mean, anybody can Google the videos and YouTube the videos and see. It's quite an attractive thing to want to be able to do with your body, the sort of stuff that he does. So I think I found a video and then I started messing about with some of the stuff that he does on videos, and I think around that time, Conor McGregor sort of adopted him as one of his as part of his team, and then not long after that, I did like a week sort of extended seminar workshop sort of thing, training, whatever you want to call it, in Denmark. Yeah, and it's he's unbelievable. I mean, any interviews you listen to him, he's not only like an incredibly physical like mover, he's a pretty incredible mind. You know what I mean? Like, and to be honest, I think that's what, 3-4 years ago I went to that. I mean, I'm running a human movement class at the yoga studio tonight. I do that every Thursday evening.
Yeah.
And I'm still not even probably past day one of the stuff that I learned on that course. And he's probably in another stratosphere of exploration now, and that I'm still messing around with things that he taught me on day one. So just another level of guy. So.
Quick recap, a couple of the things that we practiced in Sefton Park, you remember?
Yeah.
There's some footwork drills. Can you explain those real quick?
Yeah, so I do that a lot in the class. I just one of my big passions is like, my personal big passion is walking barefoot anyway, being barefoot. I think shoes are, we weren't born with them, so we probably don't need them sort of thing. Obviously, there's a lot of different things that come into that, but so they do a lot of walking drills, and they're sort of, one of their mantras is sort of that you, him and Ido Portal and his team, is you're sort of trying to bulletproof the body. So they spend a lot of time, not just, whereas in a lot of yoga, for instance, not all yoga, but a lot of yoga is all about alignment and posture and stuff. A lot of the approach that they take to things is putting yourself in stress, in bad posture, and sort of making bad posture not really a thing for your body. So with the footwork drill, I think we did some like walking on the outsides of our feet, on the insides of our feet, on toe tips, like, I mean, just to strengthen everything, all the ligaments and tendons around the ankle. And I do the same with the knees, the elbows, the wrists. Like, I incorporate a lot of that into the yoga classes as well. And I think Nate says it itself, sort of bulletproofing the body from injury the best that you can, if that makes sense.
Yeah, like it. Have you just been to that one week long seminar? Or
yeah. I mean, I'm looking at going back. Yeah, 100%. I mean, depending on what he decides to do with his life, etc., I imagine I'll be doing stuff with him for the rest of my life. I think, he has some special people in every circle of life, and he's probably one of them, isn't he? So.
Wow.
I think he says, if you find a good teacher, just learn from them. Even if you're not interested in the subject, just learn from them anyway. Like, don't worry so much about the subject, just find a good teacher. And that's sort of, it's true, I think. So he's a good teacher, and luckily enough, I'm interested in the subject. So.
Nice, I like it. It's like what we said just before we came on, and you were talking about yoga teachers and following one around, you're not so much of a fan of that. But you know, I said it's good to sort of learn from different people, take
things. Yeah, definitely.
It's always good to sort of have one or two people that you keep going back to. And you were saying, Ido Portal's one of yours.
Yeah, definitely.
Like it.
Everything he does is such a broad spectrum. You can apply it to any sport, anything. He goes into a bit of a spiritual thing with it as well, and you'll do meditation and breath control exercises and stuff as well. So.
I was going to say, more than just physical practices, it's more of a, or not more of, but it's as much as a way of thinking, a way of being, a way of presenting yourself in life.
Definitely.
Now, that leads me on to, at the end of that time in Sefton Park, when we tried some movement, we discussed... three things to positively change the world. Do you remember?
Roughly, remind me.
I was going to remind you, and then this will lead us on to what you're doing now. And we are a little bit time, so we'll
rattle through it.
Because I've still got the Smash Life blueprint questions as well, which is a quick fire round.
Okay.
So at the end, we were discussing, I've already covered two, and I'm going to cover a third one, which we spoke about. And we were unsure if we're going to start to talk about this or not. But I think that anybody, I was a bit apprehensive really, but anybody that that hears it and listens to this podcast, their soul compass has brought them here, and I think they're ready to hear it anyway. So
yeah, let's do it.
It's time to share. So we spoke about 80%, three things to change the world, positively change the world. If everybody, don't need to turn into a vegan and go 100%, but 80% sort of plant-based, considering where people are at now, you know, sort of mainstream. Yeah. If everybody could sort of, over time, it doesn't have to be just at one time, but over time, 80% sort of plant-based food, practice twice a week, at B, Warrington,
If you want.
And then the third one was to attend an ayahuasca ceremony.
Yeah, I remember now.
Yeah. Do you want to share with us a little about that and what your experience
is? Yeah, I mean...
How did you hear about it, first of all? When did you first hear about ayahuasca?
I think probably through like the Joe Rogan podcast or something like that.
Yeah.
I think a few years... There was a documentary that he'd be on called, it was on Netflix at the time, called DMT, the spirit molecule or something.
Okay.
Yeah, something like that. So I watched that, and it was quite a big deal, I think, on Netflix at the time, so a lot of people were talking about it, etc. So, while I was in the military, I did go to Peru sort of with half of the intention of doing it, and I just never ended up doing it, just ended up doing a bit of travelling, etc. I got the opportunity for a little bit of like a synchronicity. I still sort of stand by that, but at the same time, I do have other thoughts on it. I think it's an unbelievable tool, and I do think if people are ready, they should do it. And my experience was relatively good.
Just the one.
And I mean, as you'll know yourself, and for anybody that's done it, like, you sort of get told where you're at. One of the sort of things I got is, this isn't necessarily something you need at the moment. You saw the path you're on with your yoga and etc. That's where you're at, essentially. Yeah. And still, unbelievable. Like, you can't really explain the experience in this limited language, or not with my limited language anyway. But I think an amazing tool when you're ready for it. Change everything.
Tell me, so you say difficult to share with limited language. What was that vision that you saw? You say that you were already on the path of yoga anyway. So am I right?
Yeah. So
after that, though, that's when the studio came. And then do you want to go on to that, onto the studio, and how that's all come about?
I suppose so. Yeah. I mean, I'd always wanted to have some sort of, whether it be a yoga studio or a gym or something. It's always been in the back of my mind, probably not as soon as it happened. I was probably more looking like another 6 or 7 years yet. But I suppose as yoga become like a more spiritual thing, I ended up doing that. And like, what you're not. And it's very, I mean, for me, and everybody has different experiences. I was in a direct conversation with, like, Mother Ayahuasca, whatever.
Spirit world,
whatever you want to. And for me, it wasn't so. I mean, you get your hallucinations and stuff like that. That wasn't really the. For me, it was just this very like obvious to and fro, back and forth conversation. I was asking direct questions. I was getting direct answers, and a lot of it was, I suppose, quite surface level for me at the time, in terms of other stories I'd heard from other people. It was a lot of that. It was sort of, it was almost quite comforting for me, and like from the things I got told. You know, it just sort of, it was one of them where it sounds weird to people who maybe never done it, but it was like, maybe I'll see you again, sort of thing. Maybe you'll be back one day, but for now, what you're doing is good. The people you've got in your life are good. Keep them close, look after them. Because at the time, maybe I wasn't looking after some of these people in the way I should have been. Yeah. So it shows you that in quite maybe a brutal way, and sort of makes you look at yourself. And then, and that was where I was at with it. And I've considered doing it again, but I think you know, like, it comes to you when it's supposed to come. Correct. So, yeah.
Like it. Okay.
But, yeah.
Then, so moving forward then, yoga studio, tell me, at B.
Yeah, so I...
Yoga Warrington. Only opened 4 weeks ago?
Yes, we just... Well, yeah, so 4 weeks on Saturday. Yeah, just literally... Obviously, I was leaving the military. You do a year's notice, so I was telling them what to do, whether that be go to university or... I mean, I was going to teach yoga. I was already teaching yoga, but... Sort of through a little bit of inspiration from my friend Steve, who I've already spoke about, decided to look into opening a yoga studio. This was only around Christmas. We were looking at doing a sort of franchise things. We were looking at different buildings. This is me and my partner Charlotte. And then we found a building on Lausher's Lane in Warrington. It was like, it's like an old scout hut, quite a big space. I mean, I look forward to you coming to visit it. It's quite a big space. And
I know
where it is. And it was almost too good to... It was almost too good to do a franchise, and franchise would have maybe limited us a little bit to what we wanted to do. It's exactly how we wanted it. It's all like white walls and wooden floors, and I was just looking around it then. And
are you in there now?
Yeah, I've been there now. Yeah,
good lad.
And then we've got like the massage room, like the therapy room. We've got the infrared sauna in there. Yeah, got like a nice big reception. Like we've got all the infrared heaters for the hot yoga classes. So it's all singing, all dancing. It's nice. It's clean. It's exactly how we wanted it. So.
Beautiful.
Yeah, we're happy.
Wellness centre,
Yeah, essentially, yeah. That's the route. I mean, we're already going to have a lot of different things going on here with, like, kids' meditation. I don't know if you've ever heard of, like, the Emoto water thing where it's all about the vibration you put into your water and all this. There's a lady coming to do that with, like, she does it in schools with kids. So there's going to be all sorts going on here. So people should keep an eye out because a lot of different stuff.
Like it, man, like it. Listen, we need to press on. So, incredible story, man, incredible. I think that a couple of key things, I'll do a quick recap now rather than at the end. A couple of key things is gone from this kind of tough guy military this kind of like new age way of life. I use the phrase yogi. Is that the right phrase or not really?
It is just a brief, like, I see yogi as like quite a high... Lee, me personally, this is nothing to do with what anybody else calls themselves or calls other people, but I think it's quite a high, like, auspicious sort of... ...a practitioner. I'm an aspiring yogi, but
You'll get there, man.
I maybe hold that for the people living in the caves and, say, living it every second of their lives, do you know what I mean? But, yeah.
I like it. You know what? I think what we'll do is we'll cut the Smash Life blueprint and we'll bring it on next time. We'll bring it on next time.
Okay.
Because it'll take too much time. Tell me quickly, goals, plans for the future is to continue to grow the studio. Obviously, you're brand new, aren't you? So.
Yeah. I think at the moment all our energy is in that. I'm not even really thinking.
Okay.
Beyond that, just like you said, just turn it into a wellness center, getting as many people in, helping as many people as we can. Yeah, that's where all the energy is at the moment. So
beautiful.
Yeah.
I got a phrase written down. I wrote down as we were talking. Is you found your gift and now you're sharing that with others. That's your impact in the world. Yeah.
Yeah. I like it. I think so. Hopefully.
It's a beautiful thing, man. It's a beautiful thing when people find that. And one of the big things for me is that I've realised over the past sort of couple of years, really, but more so the past few months as well, is. Life is not about you, it's about others. It's not about what you get, it's about what you can give and what you can share.
Yeah, 100%.
I like it. Couple of things then, a couple of points to recap is anyone can change at any time. And when it's your time, you will know. There's probably no sort of one time where you thought, right, I'm going to change, but it just happened and you kind of go with it, don't you?
Yeah.
You know, people talk about going with the flow. Something feels right and it's a good thing then.
Yeah.
Keep going. It might not make sense, but your soul knows something inside you. You know to go down that path, don't you?
Even drags you.
There you go. You had maybe external forces and your environment might not have been the best environment, might not have been conducive to the path you were going down, but your soul knows inside, it knows what's right, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And I guess it comes down to just making a decision, and then the universe will help you out. The universe will show you the way through these synchronicities and these happenings. I want to also say, anybody listening, if you need any help with anything, reach out, send me a message. I know for me personally, I made the most progress when I worked with coaches and mentors. I think similar for yourself as well, going with a portal. And something we've not spoke about is your teacher training in India and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, all similar experiences.
Tell us quickly, you trained in Goa.
So I've done a couple. So I went to Mysore in India. That was a couple of years ago now. And then, I went to Goa most recently in January or February. Then I've done a couple of other bits. I've done a really good course with a lady called Kalavati in Cardiff, actually, just down in South Wales. Of all, but I went all the way to India for a course. Probably one of the best things I did was do a course with her in Cardiff. So,
crazy.
Yeah, good experiences,
Like it. Okay, I like to finish with, when it is all said and done, there is often more said than done. At the Smash Life Experience podcast, we endeavour to educate, inspire, so that you take action and transform. We endeavour to not be commentators, but to be doers, to take action. Daniel, what is your number one top tip to Smash Life?
Be kind to yourself, man. You know what I mean? Just be kind to yourself. Just be kind to yourself. Not worrying so much about what the world says you should do, what your mind has been conditioned to tell you need to do. Just be happy. Just be content and happy. Be kind to yourself and treat yourself well, and the rest will follow. I think the rest will follow.
Beautiful, beautiful. I'll add to that. I think that when you're kind to yourself, you're kind to others. I feel that maybe when you're not kind to yourself, that's probably where the catalyst comes, and then you're maybe not kind to others.
Yeah, also, I agree.
Being kind to yourself, yeah?
Yeah, 100%, mate. 100%.
Beautiful. So, very, very interesting chat. Very deep. Quick recap is transformation. It's possible. It's happening. You just need to make the decision. Yeah. If you're in the Warrington area, get down to just by Priestley College, is that correct?
Yeah, so B Yoga Lausher's Lane, 138. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, B Yoga Warrington. Website, B Yoga Warrington,
Beautiful. One person we missed to shout out to, when you were talking about all the lessons that you learned at Hook and Jab, shout out to Derek and Mandy, doing a great job.
Yeah, 100%. Mandy and Derek, 100% legends.
Yeah, legends.
Legends in their own right.
Putting them on the map. Okay. And a little outro for us is, thank you, Danny, for coming on. Remember, my name is Michael K. Hughes. This is the Smash Life Experience podcast. We are shifting the global paradigm of human potential and elite performance. We aim to educate and inspire so that you take action and transform. This is the next generation of human evolution. Guys, wherever you are, whatever you're up to, thanks for listening. Thanks for coming on, Dan. Appreciate it. And I'll speak to you all soon.
Thank you, mate.
Have a great day.
Cheers. Take care. Bye.